So it was late spring of my senior year of high school. I came home from school to find an envelope that I had anxiously been awaiting. And it was addressed to me from Pacific Lutheran University's athletic department. And so I sat down and I opened up the letter, and it revealed that I had indeed gotten what I had hoped for, which was a scholarship to play football at PLU. I was elated because I ate, I slept, I drank football, right? Football was my identity, it was my life, it was what I had loved since I was a small, small boy. And the chance to play it in college was like a dream come true. But second, it was really important because I really couldn't afford to go to college without that scholarship. Even with that scholarship, I was going to be maxing out my student loans. I was borrowing money from my grandmother to be able to afford to go to a private liberal arts college like that. And so this was huge. And so I had just come off an amazing football season. We'd gone undefeated that year. I was an all-league player and was a center on the football team. And for those of you who don't know, centers are kind of coaches on the field. They're at the center of the offensive line, and they make a lot of calls and make sure people are where they're supposed to be and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I was only a marginal athlete. I played other sports as well, but football was the one thing I could excel at because I was a junkie. Like I would cut class and at lunch go into the audiovisual room and just watch as much football as possible so that I knew exactly what I was doing always, every place, knew my opponent, you know, and I made up for what I lacked in sheer ability. I made up with just being so passionate, like effort, and just being relentless on the field. That's kind of the player that I was. And so I was ecstatic. And so I went off to college in August to start the summer football camp. And I realized shortly after getting there that this wasn't high school anymore, that this was a whole new ball game. Yeah, I was passionate about the game. Yeah, I had studied the game. Yeah, I was relentless and willing to do anything. But now so was every other guy on the team. Right? Like we were all the best, right, from where we were coming from. We were all cared about the game as much. We had all done the same kinds of preparation. And as I began to play, I realized, man, I have got my work cut out for me. I don't know if I can really excel and succeed in this. And I began to doubt that. And on top of that, I was really small for that position. I only weighed about, 200 pounds, which might seem like a lot to you, but is not very much to be a center on an offensive line. And so they were like, you got to put on some weight. And so I'd already had some knee problems, but I started bulking up and putting on a lot more weight so that I could be bigger to play. And my knees started to hurt a little bit more. And then it got even worse because at the final scrimmage, because I was a freshman, we all redshirted, which means we didn't actually play our freshman year so that we could save our eligibility for a year. But we had a year in scrimmage for all the freshmen. And in that game, my knee got caught underneath a pile, and I tore all the ligaments and all the tendons and dislocated my kneecap all in one fell swoop. And I was devastated. And it hurt. It hurt real bad. It hurt like nothing I've ever experienced before. And I started to do some rehab and had the basic work done on it. But I waited to have the surgery because I was working and I was going to class and I didn't want to fall behind. And so I waited to have the full reconstruction surgery later that summer. After school's out. And so I had the surgery, but the surgery got pushed back. And so my rehab got pushed back. So when I got to school the next year and football began again, I wasn't really ready to play, but I didn't really want to let anybody know that. So I just kind of kept playing. And soon I re-injured it again. And then I was out again and trying to rehab and get back. And it was just, it was devastating. It was a fiasco. And I felt my dream slipping away. So much so that at the end of that season, the coaches called me into their office and they said, Tad, you're not off the team. We want you to still be around and be here, but we're going to take your scholarship away because we've got to give it to guys that are contributing more on the team. And right, I was devastated. I mean, one, this was my dream, right? This was my identity. This is who I was. But two, I needed that money to go to school. And so I did what I always did. I came up with a plan, right? And I don't know how many of you have seen Rocky IV? I like to call my plan the Rocky IV plan, right? Rocky IV is when Ivan Drago, the Russian, right, comes in and he kills Apollo Creed in the exhibition boxing match, right? And Rocky's just crushed, and he's got to go face the Ivan Drago, who's just a machine. He's not a man. He's a machine, right? He's pumped full of steroids. He's like, what am I going to do? So Rocky goes to train, and what he does is he goes into the Siberian wilderness to get rid of all the noise, separate himself from everything, and just get back to training, right? And so I came up with the Rocky IV plan. And my Rocky IV plan, my Siberian wilderness was going to be Alaska. I happened to know, my grandmother happened to have some family friends who worked in the oil industry, and they were going to get me a job working up in the oil fields for the summer. So I was going to work 3 months up in the oil fields, and I was going to make 10 grand in one summer, which would help cover the cost of what I lost in my scholarship. And then there was nothing else to do up there, but they had a state-of-the-art gym, so all I was going to do was work and work out. And I was going to come back with enough money to be at school, and I was going to come back a lean, mean fighting machine, right? Totally rehabbed and ready to earn my spot back. That was the plan. And so at the end of the school year, I hopped on a plane to Anchorage. And the family friends picked me up at the airport, and as they picked me up, they said, you know, we got some bad news. Just as you were leaving this morning, I got a phone call that there was a huge explosion and accident at the oil field, and they've shut the whole thing down. So you can't go up tomorrow like as we planned. But he said, this stuff happens once in a while. I'm like, it does? Really? How often? That worries me. But this thing happens, so they'll probably figure out it'll be okay. So why don't you just kind of hang out for a few days and we'll see what happens. Well, so 2 weeks pass, right? And I'm going crazy, right? I'm losing money by the minute. I got nowhere to work out. Their family goes to school and work all day. I'm stuck in this house in Alaska trying to do best with workouts just around the house. I've got nothing to do. It's light 20 hours a day in this weird place called Alaska. I can't sleep at night because there's so much light streaming in, and I feel like I'm sucked in this weird vortex and in-between world, and I'm just more and more depressed. And about 2 weeks in, it definitely had to be the low point. About 2 weeks in, I'm just desperate for something to inspire me. So I start looking through the VHS tapes, and I'm looking for kind of, you know, a good, like Rocky IV. I'm looking for Rocky IV, right? A good movie that's going to inspire me. And I come to Top Gun, I think that'll do, right? And so I pop Top Gun in, right? And I'm watching Top Gun through the first part of it. And then all of the sudden, Top Gun is no longer on, and what is before me on the TV screen is this couple that I'm living with having sex. This is their homemade sex tape halfway through Top Gun, yeah? Aptly named, right? And I am horrified and mortified beyond anything, and I think, could this get any worse? Could this get any worse? Well, dinner was a little awkward that night. Needless to say, as I sat across from them trying to put together what I'd seen, but it ended up being a good night because he said, well, we still can't get you back up there yet, but I still think you should wait a little longer. These things have a way of working themselves out. So in the meantime, I talked with a friend. I got you a job detailing cars down at the car dealership in the mornings. And then there's this other thing. Our son's soccer coach quit. And so they've got about 4 weeks left in the season. Do you think that you could step in? There'd be a little bit of money and you could coach. And I said, well, God, I haven't played soccer in a long time. But he's like, well, you know, they're eight-year-old kids. It's basic fundamentals. You know that, right? And you've been around coaches and coaching your whole life. You can do this. And I thought, well, you know, of course. Like, I'm bored out of my mind. Anything to make a little money, something to do. So I do it. So that becomes my life the next 4 weeks. I go to the car dealership in the mornings. I detail cars. I hop on a bus to be after school to coach the kids' soccer games and soccer practices. And something really amazing happens in the midst of that coaching. In fact, there's one kid in particular. There's a kid named Emmett. There's something about Emmett that reminded myself of me. He was this kid whose brother had been this amazing local soccer player, like a soccer phenom, right? And so, and his brother was his hero, right? And Emmett came from a pretty poor family and didn't have a lot going for him, or at least he felt like he didn't. And so, like, for him, like, he had to be like his brother. That's all there was, right? He was his hero. He had to be this amazing soccer player. And he was so wound tight, right, on the soccer field. I mean, he didn't get along with anyone else on the team because everyone was an enemy, and he played like aggressive but also sort of scared at the same time, and he just for him, like, this was everything, and he had to succeed or he was no one, right? Like, failure was the ultimate worst thing, and he just couldn't handle it. And I remember he reminded me of me in a lot of ways, because I was that kid. I grew up around the quarter horse and thoroughbred racetracks where my parents trained horses. And so my early heroes were jockeys, right? I would run around the racetrack pretending like I was a jockey and you'd be whipping myself like this. And people would say, "Tad, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up?" And I'd say, "I'm going to be a jockey," because those were my heroes. And they would look at the size of me and go, buddy, I don't think you're going to be a jockey. I mean, that's great, that's cute, but you're not going to be a jockey by the size of you." And that crushed me. But the only thing my dad loved more than horse racing, or as much as horse racing, was football. And so he put a football in my hand and he said, "Be good at this, son. This you can be good at." And I did. Like, I watched full football games by the time I was 7. I put my whole identity into it. I had the standings on my wall. My entire walls were covered with football posters. I had a weight bench in my room through most of my life. That was what I lived for. That's who I was. It was my ticket. It was my thing. And I begin to hear myself trying to reach out to Emmett. And in the midst, I begin to reach out to myself as I started to remind Emmett that this wasn't really about soccer. I told him that no matter how good he was, at some point, he wouldn't be a soccer player anymore. And that this didn't define him, and that if he ever wanted to just have fun and know how good he really could be, he had to let go of that at some level and realize that it wasn't really about soccer, right? That wasn't what defined him, but soccer was just a place where he could learn about life. It was about who he was as a soccer player, who he was in whatever he was doing. And so after that 4 weeks passed, I made a decision. And I went home. And I went home with no money in my pocket, or very, very little money in my pocket. And I got a job that summer, finishing out the summer, doing, guess what, detailing cars. And I went back to college, and I walked into my coach's office, and I said, "I quit." And I went down the street, and I got a job at Enterprise Rent-A-Car doing, guess what, detailing cars. And I got another side job. And I worked my way to have enough money to pay for school. And I said to the coaches, "Hey, I want to still hang around. I want to maybe do some coaching, right? And so that I can kind of, I still love the game and I want to learn from you guys." And I began to devour books of theology and philosophy in my free time and began to pursue what was going to be my career later in ministry and as a community organizer. And then about 10 years ago, I started coaching again, finally. And I coached high school football for 10 years, and I loved it. And I loved it not just because I loved the game, but I loved it because football really became this way of teaching kids about life and realizing that it wasn't about football at all, which is what I finally realized, that wasn't who I was. It was about what football had given me and what it taught me about being a man and being able to work with others and work with a team, that's really what I was learning about in all of that time. And so this year, I'm not coaching football for the first time in 10 years. And it's been a little hard, but part of the reason that I'm not coaching football is that I'm going to become a father for the first time in December. And so I took a little break from that. But I still, to this day, I run into football players everywhere I go all the time, former players. And some are in college, some are working jobs. A few of them went on to play college ball. Nobody's gone on beyond that. But most of them are just living normal lives like you and I. And when I see them around, they'll say, "Hey, coach." And just the other day, I ran into one. Holly and I were at the sandwich shop having a sandwich. And one of my players came by and said, "Hey, coach." And we talked for a minute. And when he left, he said, "Bye, coach." And Holly looked at me and she said, "You know, are you missing being a coach this year?" She said, "And do you like it when they call you coach?" And I thought to myself, you know, I do miss it this year. I miss it, and I do really, really like it when they call me coach. But you know, I'm going to like it even more when our son calls me dad. Thanks.